need this back.
Yeah. So, you want to put a little note on the outside so the grader won't just say, oh, hey, I already graded this. Why did he put this back in my pile? Does that make sense? Yeah, I forgot my name. Yeah, what is my name? Maybe you could help me. Okay. Yeah, this is March U Days.
Were there lots of people that kind of look like Christians and said they don't act like Christians?
Why would they use your GPS right before final? It's not fair.
The administration.
They just want more of you guys next year, that's all.
Couldn't they do this after?
You know, we get
they do.
We get really messed up.
April. It'll be April 1, 2, 3. There'll be a whole slew of people there. This time was a small one. Okay, what did I need here?
Tell them all to go into art majors.
Yes. Or theology.
Oh, it's working again. Okay, cool.
Concepts of art.
Okay.
Art history education.
Okay.
You'll be bored, but while you're thinking about it,
I've actually considered taking up business just so I have something to do.
Well, that may be the case.
Learn 3 new instruments. I've learned a couple programming languages.
How is that guitar?
I haven't been handing out enough homework, have I?
The best indicator is I'm up to my old typing speed in both QWERTY and Dvorak.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. That'll be probably a few years for me. I don't know. That was a big mistake.
Okay, thanks. I
won't
make that.
Okay, so you guys remember we talked about that old exam we did on Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
So, old exam is homework. So what homework is this? Homework number what?
14.
14?
Yeah.
14. Do the old exam.
I don't know. You tell me.
Hand it out Tuesday. Who was this? Your roommate did
my
this?
My roommate, my freshman year at Union.
Really?
How did he manage?
Oh, he failed everything except intro to engineering.
Except intro to engineering, the easiest class, huh?
Why?
What was his name?
Why?
Eric Pauly.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. His parents pulled him out.
They
would. Well, good for them. Man, they should have pulled him out like the first day he skipped. Man.
What's wrong with skipping a class?
Well, you have a really good reason, maybe. But, man, you're paying $50 for this class, right? What's wrong with taking a $50 bill and ripping it in half, throwing the garbage, you know?
Well,
I mean,
I don't know.
I don't know.
If I could pay for this out of pocket, I wouldn't be paying for this.
What's the difference? It's an investment, right?
For one thing, otherwise we wouldn't owe the government $40,000 for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, right.
If I could pay for this out of pocket, I would just accept.
You would probably be making big bucks, right? You'd be making more money than me. You'd be.
Of
course, you know, making more money than a teacher in having a school system is not a huge economy.
Yeah, that's true. You'll make more money from me when you get out of your first job out of here. But you won't have as much fun. Okay, so here we go. We're doing the pendulum, right? Whoops, not pendulum. Okay. Yeah.
You should do that instead of.
Okay, so let's remind ourselves what in the world we were doing here. We were doing this example. And the reason we're doing this example is because I'm trying to do more examples because I think examples help you and actually, you know, you're getting less theory, too bad. Okay, we got this mass hanging here on this cord, and we've got it back at minus theta. We said the force on it in the direction it's going to move, we're only going to write the summation of the forces in the theta direction equals mass times acceleration of theta. And we said that the force was mg sine theta. You can see that right here, it's the sine leg. And it's actually mg sine of minus theta, because that's minus theta. And that equals ml theta double dot, and then we brought the minus sign out here, and we ended up with this guy right here. Now, my question for you is that equation a linear equation?
Our theta double dot is second derivative of theta?
It is.
Okay.
With respect to time. With
respect
to time, yeah. Bryson is here. There you go, you need one of these. Okay, so it's not linear. That's what somebody said. Now, why is it not linear? Yeah, this would have to be a theta here, right?
It is a theta.
Yeah. It's approximately a theta.
It's almost a theta?
Yeah.
So where are we coming from?
Well, for
theta
small
theta
angles, it is theta.
Right, yeah. For small angles, it's approximately theta.
Oh,
So now this is nonlinear. You know, theta double dot plus, what was it, g over l sine theta equals zero is a nonlinear differential equation. That means if we had a solution for theta, if we had two solutions for theta, if you doubled the initial condition here, you wouldn't double the theta. You know, this system, if you doubled the initial angle, right, our input or initial conditions, right? So if we doubled the initial condition, it wouldn't, things wouldn't just be double all the way along. So we need to make an approximation. We linearize it. Now, I know you're just going to want to say, well, let's just replace theta with theta, I mean, sine theta with theta, okay? But I would like to talk to you a little bit about why you would do that, okay? And what your general principle of operation is here, because some of you guys are AMEs, and you will not take electronics where probably all the EEs, you know, get really good at this, okay? So what I want to do is I really want to say, you know, this guy right here what we want to do is we want to do a Taylor series for this nonlinear doohickey here.
Okay.
And you can pick what angle you want that Taylor series to do, but I should have picked this as maybe theta equals zero over here, right? You know, and then it would have turned out the same, but the idea is here, what we're doing is we're doing a Taylor series about of sine theta about theta equals zero. The theta equals zero is the expansion point. So we're saying that sine theta is approximately equal to theta, you know, plus, and then it would be, you know, theta cubed or minus theta cubed over 3 factorial, right? And then plus the, you know, theta to the 5th over 5 factorial and so on, right? And if we wanted to do this about another point, you know, we would basically expand it about another point, and
the Taylor series for sine and cosine are both good for
information. Yeah, sure. Yep, they are, but no, this is the, we're just going to take just the first term here.
We can ignore the others because they get too small.
Right, yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the idea is, you know, basically what we're saying is we're looking at a picture of this thing kind of like this. Here is sine theta. This is theta here. And this is sine theta. And we have a thing. Here's sine theta. It goes up like this, right? And so what we're saying is right about this point right here, we can approximate that Taylor series as just being sine theta, okay? Now, what people do if you pick another place to approximate it, like maybe right here, right? Then what would happen is you would have two parts. You would have the part that was that you'd kind of have to do with a nonlinear thing, and then you'd have the small angle variation around your point of what we call the quiescent point right here, or the place you're making your perturbation about. So if you look at this guy, the place we're making the perturbation is right here, and it's actually a very handy thing because there's no DC or no offset there, right? So that's kind of a, you know, an interesting thing. And the double E's have to do this all the time because what do? They work with transistors which have curves that are nonlinear, kind of like the sine curve. And you know, I'm not sure what you ME's do that has to do with that, but every once in a while you run into a situation where the stuff you're working with is not linear, right? And you've taken, let's see, you took circuit analysis, that was all linear stuff, right? Then you took, linear algebra, that was all about linear stuff, right? And then you took linear network analysis, that was all about linear stuff, right? And then you're going to take feedback and control, and that's pretty much all about linear stuff, right? And that means at this point, you know, you maybe had differential equations, which had a few nonlinear ones in there, but most of the time, you know, 4 times out of 5 or something, it's been all linear stuff, right? So what are you going to do when you end up with a real-world situation? In real-world situations, nothing is perfectly linear, right? I mean, if I double the input and keep doubling it and keep doubling it and keep doubling it, sometime the thing is going to break, right? And when the thing breaks, then it's not linear anymore,
it's
right?
It's like the after the yield part of the stress strain.
Exactly, yeah. So those kind of issues, you're going to run into those things in life, okay? And what do you do? Well, what you do is you make a linear approximation like this of your model, okay? And it's only good, look at this thing, it's only good for small theta. See, when I make theta go big, you know, this thing says it keeps going down like this, right? But it doesn't. It goes like that, right? And so if you want to get, you know, this thing for, you know, larger theta, you have to use nonlinear methods, and then all of a sudden you lost your crutch. And our crutch is superposition and proportionality, okay? And then you can't do all those tricks we talked about, you know, with the Fourier series, you know, where you just put the transfer function in there. Transfer functions don't work anymore, right? They are only, this is, you know, would only be valid for small angles in this case, right? Does that make sense? Okay, so I just wanted you guys to realize that sometimes, you know, the equations you get are nonlinear, and you can still solve things as long as you're only worried about a small wiggle here. So probably I shouldn't have drawn this thing quite so far over here, right? It's probably still okay maybe at that angle, but it's in, you know, it's starting to get off, right? So don't bring it way up here like this, right? And expect things to be right. Okay. So now we just got to do that. We got that. So now we'll just do the approximation that you're all used to. Theta plus G, whoops, not Q, G over L.
If somebody was really in a weird mood, wanted to write out that series in summation notation.
You want to do it?
So, every other one is positive?
Yeah, that would be minus 1 to the... What's it going to be? Minus 1 to the 2n plus 1? Is that right? Theta to the n. Is that right? If I try theta, if I put in n equals 0, I get minus 1, whoops.
No, I think it's just n plus 1.
Just n plus 1. Yeah. Let's try this. Minus 1, but I'm only doing...
Well, then it's always positive, or it's always equal.
Right, that's not going to work. So what do I want? So what is it? Is it 2n?
Minus
it's
1.
It's 1 half of n minus 1.
Oh, that's what we got to do. N over 2 minus 1? 1 half of n?
No, 1 half of quantity n minus 1.
Let's try that, okay. N minus 1 over 2. Okay, so let's see, what do we got here? If we got
right.
N equals 1.
No.
Zero.
That's 0. Minus
which
1 to the 0
positive.
Is 1.
3
that's okay.
Is 2 over 2, which is 1, which is negative.
Oh, you're good.
Good. Okay, good. So that works, right? Okay. Okay, so anyway, we've got this guy right here. Now let's put him in state form, right? So I need to write x. X is going to be equal to what? That's probably the best, right? Because theta and theta dot are, first of all, they're natural, right? And they are the things that we would normally use for the initial conditions, right? Because if I started this thing, you'd have to ask me how far I moved it over here to start with at time t equals 0, right? And what kind of velocity did it have when I let it go, right? Does that make sense?
Well,
that's right. Let's see. It actually, it does matter, but it's good because we don't want it there because it's not supposed to be there, but we've got it here, right? Okay.
So it has initial acceleration.
We don't want it in our equation because otherwise, if our equation is right here, and which I think it is, you know, it's not there. Actually, if there was a theta dot in this equation right here, it would actually be kind of like you had rusty hinges on this thing or
that
something.
It would be damping.
Yeah, maybe it was going through water or something, right? That would be the
or air.
Yeah, right. Or honey. I could just see this thing in honey, wouldn't you imagine? How boring would that be to watch, right? Okay, so what do I need to do here? I need to do x dot equals, well, that'll be d dt of this theta dot, right? Equals, and now this has got to be A, right? This is the A matrix. And then I've got X, theta dot. You sound
you're
like my son.
Of the mood today,
yeah.
We should see you
yeah.
Take a test.
He had an electronics test this morning, guys.
Yeah.
It's all good.
That's
yeah, that's the only reason he's in a good mood. Yeah, right. Okay, so you. Oh, there's no input on this thing, right? Get rid of that, right? You agree?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The input would just
be an initial velocity?
Plus zero u. Or no, input would be if I had some forcing function on here, some pusher.
Oh, okay.
You know, somebody was blowing on it or something. Yeah, right.
Actually,
something.
Like someone pushing a swing.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so I want to know what goes in this hole right here. What goes in this hole right here? This is a zero. Okay, good. What goes in this hole?
Wait, why is that zero? There is a theta, just not a theta dot.
Well, this is ddt of theta, so that's theta dot equals.
Oh.
Okay. Ah, yes, somebody agrees, said there's a one here, right?
Because
it's zero theta plus one theta dot, right? Everybody agree?
So, theta dot.
Okay.
Theta dot.
Yeah, right. Isn't that incredible? Okay, now what about this one down here? ddt of theta dot. What's that?
That's double dot.
Theta double dot. Okay, now what do I put over here then?
Minus g over l.
Excellent. 2 points for Travis. Okay, how much is this one?
Zero.
Yeah, okay.
Why is g over l?
Okay, this guy here, Travis, is doing this in his head.
Oh, after you solve
it, yeah. Yeah, minus g over l theta.
If it is, it should be.
Is that okay? Okay.
Is that right?
I think it's right.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Is that okay? So theta double dot equals minus g over l theta plus zero theta dot.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So now if we solve this thing, what would we do to solve it? So we're going to use eigenvalue eigenvector methods, right? Just like we did last day? Okay. So let's do that because this is just an example. So here we go. So I'm going to say just like we did before, I'm going to assume a solution x equals w times e to the st, right? This is a vector, a 2 by 1 vector times the 1 by 1 e to the st, right? So, x equals west, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I've got s west, southwest, huh? Southwest equals a west, huh? No. Yeah. Southwest equals A west. Right? Okay. Well, what I did was I plugged in this guy here for x dot. I took the derivative. I got S west, southwest here.
Oh, wait. No, that means.
And then on the right hand side, I had A times x, which is A west, right? Okay. Now I can divide off the S, right? Is that okay?
What's the W
line? W, that's a vector, a 2 by 1 vector.
So you can't drop that.
I can't drop that out. No, you can't divide by vectors. You can only divide by scalars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Okay, hold it. We got to catch up for Bryson here. Okay, so here's what we're doing. We're going to solve this thing with this guess. This is our guess for a solution. It's some vector times e to the st. It's going to be a 2 by 1 vector because this is a 2 by 1 vector we're trying
okay.
to get, right?
Yeah.
So 2 by 1 vector e to the st. Now I'm going to plug this guy back in here. This is x dot here, you know. This is dx dt, right? So I took the derivative of this guy and I got s west. Okay, and then that equals A west, right? And so then I divided off S, and I got SW equals AW. Is that okay? Okay, so now the next thing is to go and just say this implies that SI minus A times W equals the zero vector. I put an I matrix, identity matrix right here, and I pulled the AW over, and then I factored out SI minus A on the left. Three steps. I probably shouldn't do that, but we did this last day, so this should be reviewed, right? Okay. Okay, now we have to say there's two possibilities here. W will be the trivial solution, all zeros, right? Or SI minus A is not invertible, right? I'd like the SI minus A to be not invertible because I'd like to solve this for other than zero initial conditions. And I'd like to actually say we have a theta dot sub zero and a theta sub zero, right? So I'm going to, maybe I should write that over here. We're going to assume theta of 0 equals theta 0 and theta dot of 0 equals theta dot 0. Okay? Is that all right? Okay. Okay, so now I need to solve this. So I'm going to say that thing is uninvertible, and so what I'm going to say is SI minus A, the determinant of that guy, has to be equal to zero. That means that one row is, you know, a linear combination of all the others, at least, right? On this SI minus A, it means you can't invert this matrix right here, right? So SI minus A is equal to, I got to put in my little thing here. I'm going to have this nice matrix S minus 1, G over L, oops, G over L, not G over G, G over L, and S. And then I need determinant of that. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. This is SI minus A. SI gives you S's on the diagonals, because I have 1 on the diagonals, and then minus A, I did subtract that guy, there was zeros in the diagonals, and that. So now I'm going to do the determinant. That's this number times this number minus that number times that number. So that'll be S squared plus G over L equals, and I want to set that equal to 0, right?
Wouldn't it be S squared minus G over L?
No, you take this times this minus that times that, and the minus 1 cancel to give you a plus.
I had minus signs on both.
Yeah, you don't want a minus on the G over L when you do the SI minus A. Okay? So far, everybody with us? Is this okay? Okay, this step right here. W is a 2x1 vector, right? Now, what I said was that if I could invert this SI minus A, then I just invert, I multiply by the inverse of SI minus A right here and the inverse of SI minus A times 0, right? And so I'd end up with W equals 0 if I did that, right? And I didn't like that solution because that says, well, theta equals 0. And I can see theta equals 0 would give me a solution to this thing, but it won't match my initial conditions up here, right? It doesn't match these arbitrary things unless theta dot is 0 and theta is 0, 0, right? So I didn't like that solution, so I said there was another possibility here, right? The other possibility is that I couldn't invert this matrix right here, right? Like instead of a 2x2, if A matrix was a 1x1, maybe this guy, this thing SI minus A actually equaled 0 itself. You see, you'd have this guy equal 0 or that guy equal 0, right? But this time, since it's a 2x2, what I mean is I can't invert that. That means that the top equation for this SI minus A, S and minus 1, would be a linearly dependent with minus G over L and S, okay? And in order to make that happen, if I want to make it non-invertible, I just make the determinant equal to 0. Because the determinant, if you take the inverse of a matrix, you can write it as the adjoint matrix divided by the determinant of that matrix. And if that determinant equals 0, then you'd be dividing by 0 when you did that, right? So that's how you can't invert something. Or, you know, this just makes the one row linear combination of the other by setting that like that. So this thing right here, by the way, what is this thing called? This equation that I wrote on the bottom line here. Yeah, this is the characteristic equation, CE. Okay, that's it, right? Determinant of SI minus A equals 0. That's always the characteristic equation. Enough of that. Okay, so So let's see. Now we're going to go and we solve that characteristic equation, right? And we get S equals plus or minus J root G over L. Did I skip too many steps there? See, I brought the G over L to the other side, becomes a minus G over L. The square root of minus something is a J something, right? And when you take the square root, you know, there's the plus and minus solutions, right? Okay, so those are the two values for S, you know, S1 or S2. I'll make it S1, 2. So maybe I should say S1 equals plus J root G over L, and S2 equals minus J root G over L. Is that okay? Okay, cool. So then, now what that means is that we found two S's that would work to make these two rows linearly independent, or make this thing, this SI minus A right here, make it non-invertible. There were two possibilities that would do that, right? So each one of those two possibilities corresponds to a solution that would make this equation work. Just one solution, right? Now this is a linear equation, and so when you have two solutions, you need to let yourself have some linear combination of those two solutions as the solution. So you would take a little bit of each of those two solutions, okay, as the actual solution. So what I'm going to say is I'm going to have my x of t will actually look like this. X of t will be W1 times e to the S1 t. And then I could put plus W2 times e to the S2 t, right? Those would be the two possible things. And actually, these W1s contain within them arbitrary constants, okay? So let's write that down. W1 and W2 contain arbitrary constants of multiplication or something like that. In other words, what I mean is this. SI minus A times KW equals zero as well, right? See, if I take this equation right here and I was to put a K in there, this is a 1 by 1, so you can put it in anywhere you want, right? It commutes with everything. So you could put a KW in there. If I change this W to KW, it's the same thing, right? If I divide this equation by K, I get that guy. If I multiply this guy by K, I get this guy, right? So what that means is W is not, it's not uniquely determined, okay? And the reason it's not uniquely determined is because we made this row linearly dependent on that row, right? So when you write the equation for these two lines, if you drew them on the board, you know, graphed them, they'd be parallel. And they'd be one right on top of the other, right? The same line, right? Okay, so let's now find that line for each of these two S's. There's one for each of them. Okay, so I got to do S1. So this is for S1. S1 equals J root G over L. Okay, what do we have? We have SI minus A. SI minus A times W1 equals 0. And that would be written in over here. Now when I put in the S1 here, which is J the square root of G over L, I get this. J root G over L. That's for the S. And I got minus 1 here. And I got root G over L here. And then over here I've got J root G over L. And that's that guy. Now I have to put in here my W11, W12, right? Does that make sense? And that's got to equal what? What does this, what goes in this vector over here? Yeah, 0 and 0, right? You guys agree? Excellent. Okay, so now we've got this guy times that guy minus that guy times that guy, right? So let me write that equation down for you so you can see this happen. J root G over L times W11 minus W12 equals 0. Now that's the top equation, right? You agree? That looks okay to you guys? Okay, so that's the top. Now I'm going to do the bottom equation, and it's going to be G over L times W11 plus J root G over L W12 equals 0. Now look at this top equation and that bottom equation. What number can you multiply the top equation by to get the bottom equation?
J square root of G over L.
Negative J root G over L. Right, yeah, that's what works. Oh, was it positive J? Did I make a mistake here?
I think you, well, the first one is 1, so 1 J root G.
But the other one?
Yeah, you multiply by two J, so J is a negative. Right. So you get.
Yeah, so it's J
root G over L, root G over L, so then G over L. So
you'd have to have an additional negative.
So W11 equals 1, W12 equals 2.
Something's wrong here. If I take this one right here, I multiply this guy by J root G over L, I get minus G over L here, right?
No. We're switching them. I'm saying W11 should be 1, and W12 should be J root G over L.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, I agree we can do that, but I'm trying to figure out what number is it that I multiply this top equation by to get the bottom equation, because... negative J root G over L. If I might, so that'll give me this first one, right? But the problem is here, when I multiply minus J times plus J, I get a 1, right?
Are you multiplying the top one?
I'm multiplying the...
top one.
Oh, the top one. Okay. So it's going to be minus J root G over L. That's what you're saying. Okay, you got it. Thank you. You figured it out for me, Bryson. That's excellent. Okay, so now I agree. So you guys see this equation is the same as that equation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if they're the same equation, all we have to do is just use one of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the top one would say we could just, one way to do it is pick W11 as being arbitrary, like 1, and then just solve for W12, but I want to show you how this constant comes in here naturally if you don't do that. So this just says W12 equals J root G over L times W11, right? And so that would mean that my W vector, so this implies the W vector here, W1 vector equals, it's like this. It's W11 and J root G over L times W11. Notice that W11 can be factored out like this K right here, right? Does that make sense? Okay, great. So now the second one is pretty easy here. Here's what the one for the second one. We can just do the second one by inspection, because you see, if I just change to S from S1 to S2, it just changes the sign on the J, right? It's just the complex conjugate, right?
Yes.
And so that means W2 is equal to W1 complex conjugate. So I'll just write here, W2 equals W1 complex conjugate. Do you agree? Okay, so now let's write what is x. X is equal to x of t equals, well, we had it somewhere here, right here. W1 e to the s1 t plus w2 e to the s2 t. Ah, that's like w1 plus its complex conjugate, right? Because s2 is the complex conjugate of s1 and w2 is the complex conjugate of w1, right? So maybe I should say s2 equals s1 complex conjugate, okay? So now I can say when I take this thing and add it to this thing, that's adding something to its complex conjugate, which is like twice the real part, right? So this will be twice the real part of W1 e to the S1t, which is equal to twice the real part of W11 J root G over L W11 times, put a really big brackets around here, e to the, which one? It's plus j, root g over l, t, right? Which is equal to 2 w11 1 j, oops, I guess I better, better do the real part here. Re of 1 j root g over l e to the j root g over l. Okay, so I'm going to do the top one first. 2 w11, w11 is real, so 2 w11 like that, right? 2 w11. Now I got the real part of 1 times e to the j root g over l t. What is that? What is the real part of e to the j root g over l t?
Cosine,
yeah. Lauren is on the ball here. It's cosine. So I'm going to have on the top, I'm going to have cosine of root g over l t, right? Now, if I take j root g over l, I'm going to have a root g over l I could probably put out right here, g over l, right? Now, if I take j times e to the j something, and I look for the real part of that, I'm really, you know, the j is an imaginary part, and the imaginary part times an imaginary part will give you a real part, right? Imaginary part times the real part gives you an imaginary part, right? So I want to take the imaginary part of this, which is sine, and multiply it by the j. Now when the j's multiply, I get j times j, that's a minus 1, right? So I need to put a minus sign right in here, and then I just put sine of root g over l t, okay? Oh, you know what? This is not going to work. You know what we just did? W1, remember W1 and W2 were arbitrary, right? So they really aren't necessarily complex conjugates of one another, right? Because I've only got one constant left here to apply for the initial conditions. What happened is this guy is not true.
Except that they're arbitrary, so they can't be true. No, but you have...
No, what we would say, it's almost true, but not quite. We could say W2, what is it? W2 is this, if we did it. See, because you see, this W11 was an arbitrary number. It could have been anything, right? Mm-hmm. So the W22 could also be anything, not necessarily equal to W11, right? That's the problem. That's what I just did. I'm a dummy. Okay. W2 equals like this. It's going to be W22 and then minus J. Whoops, J.
Why would it be W22?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe 2-1. Yeah, I think you're right. 2-1. And then minus j root g over l, right, like that, right? You agree? Oh, times W21. I forgot the W21 in there. W21, right? And so then we can't do this, right? Too bad. I would have to mess that up and redo that, right? So, okay, so. So now we got to write it as x of t equals, it's going to be W11 times 1 j root g over l e to the j root g over l t plus W21 times 1 minus j root g over l e to the minus j root g over l t. And
right on the edge of the board.
Okay, and now how do we find W11 and W21?
X of 0.
Yeah, right. So x of 0. X of 0 equals, so it's going to be theta 0, right? Theta dot 0, right? That's what I'm getting from right over here, right? X is theta dot. So x of 0 is theta dot 0. I mean, theta 0, theta dot 0, right? Is that okay? And so that equals, okay. Tell me if I'm doing this right here. Can you tell me what goes in these two columns? I'm putting in 0, so the e to the j g over lt always a 1, right? Does that make sense? So this guy's 1, that guy's 1, right? So I have this x0 theta 0 equals w1 times this vector plus w2 times that vector.
So you just get the columns.
Ah, exactly. 1 j root g over l 1 minus j root g over l, right? Now notice, this is what Joe is saying. This column right here, and that column right there. This guy came right down there. This guy went right in there. Now let's check and see. Do you see how that works? The first equation here is W11 times 1 plus W21 times 1. Notice I got 1 times W11, 1 times W12, right? Oops, 1, 2, 2, 1. I guess it's 2, 1. My mistake. 2, 1, right? Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. It gets pretty nasty.
It gets what?
It gets pretty nasty.
Right, but there's something very interesting about this, okay? This matrix here is actually a very special matrix. Because W11 tells you how much of this eigenmode we have. This thing right here is an eigenmode. This is the first eigenmode. We've got W11 of that eigenmode, and we've got W12 of this eigenmode. This is the second eigenmode. Okay? And they got W11 of this and W21 of that. And so if I look at this equation right here, this is really telling me how much of each of those eigenmodes, you know, this matrix right here times the amount of each of those eigenmodes gives me how much of each of the things in my way of thinking about it, theta and theta dot, right? In reality, theta and theta dot are not eigenmodes of the system. Last day when we did a problem, the things we picked were actually eigenmodes of the system. Let's just quickly look at that before you run off for a great weekend here. Notice, these guys were uncoupled. There were zeros here, right? And those guys, the things we got, notice it's W11, this is the first eigenmode right here, right? And this was the second eigenmode right there, right? And they were uncoupled here, right? This guy is orthogonal to that guy, right? They're uncoupled. You could solve the first equation, you could solve for the first eigenmode today and solve for the next one tomorrow, and you don't have to remember the solution to the first one to get the second one, okay? These guys are uncoupled. These guys over here are theta and theta dot are actually, they're kind of coupled together, okay? I can't just have just this eigenmode or just that eigenmode, because you can see this guy's not real and that guy's not real, right? But nevertheless, these are uncoupled from one another in this form, okay? So there's some things to think about here. Just think about this as you're riding your bike out to Whitman Mission, you know, on Sabbath afternoon. Think about how God made this thing with eigenmodes.
Did God make eigenmodes?
I believe so. You would, yeah.
I used to have this friend that said that blue sort of saved his bedtime stories.
Yeah.
But they're not. They're actually God's bedtime stories.
God's bedtime stories, yeah. Yeah. He just gave us an elegant world which we can explore and enjoy.
That is so elegant, we will never figure everything out.
As soon as we give up on the Higgs boson, everything will reduce back to Newtonian physics.
Yeah. I saw something very interesting on Slashdot that I don't understand and I'd like to understand. There's a guy that published an article in 2007 saying that you can now use, a whole lot more information over one radio frequency than you could before.
With quantum?
Some kind of, yeah, using the spin and whatever. It was on Slashdot this morning. I have to go read this art or this paper.
It's
something I don't understand.
Using quantum entanglement along with your shortwave.
Yeah, but it's so practical, he's actually demonstrated it.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's,
and all he did to the antenna was he just took a dish, you know, and he cut down with snips and he just split it like this to kind of make it seems like it would just make a circularly polarized thing. But it's actually not. So it's like, hello, this is like,
no.
I've got to think about this. This is like so strange. So I don't know. Yeah, but anyway, it was on Slashdot this morning.
Is that a good place to read
it? Yeah, I don't know. That's where nerds like to get their, you know, I don't know, Linux guys or open source guys or people that you know, like that kind of thing, like Slashdot. People that are just kind of like us, I guess. Yep.
So this column.
One, yeah, and that, yeah. Well, I put in at time t equals zero. But you see, you can actually do this at any time. I could write it like this. I could write x of t, and maybe I should erase that last picture and put this on there too. I could write theta of t right here, right?
Okay.
Theta dot of t. And then that will equal this same matrix, that same guy right there.
With these.
With instead of W1, it will be W11 e to the j root g over l t, and this will be W21 e to the minus j root g over l t
Okay.
And then I've got.
Okay, that's.
And same matrix here. Now, I'll erase that last picture.
I'll erase that
mm-hmm.
It's the one where we had to write this circuit in a state space. But, oh, wait.
Yeah, let me just erase this here. Yes, erase that image. Now, did I say erase this? Yeah. You know, yes, erase the image. Okay.
Oh, yeah, he
asked
me to turn that in
because
he had to go to
something
like that.
Yeah. Is this for me?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll stick it in my pile. Okay, how can I answer your question, Edgar?
Okay.
Okay, I'm trying to write this in state space. Solve it now. I wrote it here in the state space equation. Where is it?
Okay, there's a problem. I can see a problem. Remember what I told you, whenever you get something like this in the bottom?
Yes.
That means it's exponentially increasing, right?
Yeah.
And then there's a problem. So there's an algebra mistake, which is a horrible thing when you've done all this work.
Yeah, and look, I even did the inverse Laplace transform.
I know. And look, you're right. See, look. And you got something exponentially increasing.
Yes.
Oh, horrible. I can't have that from a circuit, can you?
No.
Not this kind of circuit.
No.
So some algebra mistake. But, you know, if you hadn't made that algebra mistake, it looks like, you know, what you did was not too bad. So my apologies. But do you understand what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, yeah. So, you know what you need to do? Well, yeah, we need to go look for your algebra mistake, I guess. But Aaron over there has worked on this problem for probably, he said at least 6 hours, probably more like eight or something by now or something. He understands that problem. And you know what you should do? If you can't find me, go see Aaron. He understands that problem.
I can probably work it through with you.
Yeah. He has got that nail. And he's done it two ways at least.
Yeah.
Okay.
That kind of problem's fun.
So he has really been doing his homework on this one homework. I mean, like, incredible.
So, Dr. Froning?
Yeah.
You know I'm significantly behind on my homework, right?
I'm worried about you.
Yeah.
Somehow you're still surviving the exams.
Yeah.
Which is good, but we still need some homeworks, right?
Yeah, I know. Right now the consuming thing is to get my writing for engineer's paper done.
Okay, go for that. I can tell you, I will accept homeworks from you since you were sick up to the time of the final, okay? And I don't remember whether that's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday,
right.
Or whatever, right? Well, it can't be Thursday, but Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday.
Is there any way that I can, like, do a project to compensate for several of the homeworks? Like, you were talking about making a video that explains something.
Yeah.
Like, for several of the Laplace transform homeworks, doing a video.
Yeah, I think I'll make that deal with you for ones that are from, that were covered on past exams that you've already demonstrated you did okay on the exam, okay?
Right.
So that's good. But for homeworks, you know, like this one that I just erased here, I won't make that deal on those,
right,
okay?
That
because that I want you to do that homework because it'll help your exam score, okay?
Yeah.
But yeah, I will do that. If you make a video on something, you know, bring it in to me and I'll tell you, you know, how many homeworks it looks like it's worth to me.
Okay.
And it'll, you know, probably be worth, you know, several. I mean, doing a video is not an easy thing. I know.
Right.
So, if that's more fun for you. That's more fun for me, and it'd also be really good for everybody else, right? So
it just feels like I would be able to get that done quicker than sitting down and pounding mm-hmm. out all the homework.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Froni?
Yeah.
Okay. this is what I have to do, right? I have to take the inverse. Okay, so I have to take
the SI minus
here.
A, and you got to take the inverse of that, right? Mm-hmm. So S.
That looks right to me.
That looks right. Okay.
So then
so
when
the
I
inverse.
Take the inverse of that, switch these two, then switch the signs on this.
And so let's just check. We got S squared minus. It's this minus. So it's going to be S squared plus 1 over LC.
S squared plus.
So wait a minute. This is kind of. This is strange here. I'm a little worried about the equations up here. Maybe we better check those. Okay, so here's what we said. It looks like you have an oscillator. We lost the resistor somewhere. We lost the resistor. I don't see any R's in here, right?
Mm.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So, okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to look back at your V sub L equals L di dt. I agree. Okay. And what is V sub L?
A voltage across
the
inductor.
Right, which is also equal to the current here, which is another state variable.
Oh,
current
I know.
Times 1
oh,
plus
I know
VC.
What oh, okay, so this is wrong here when I said VC equals
V. No, it doesn't. See, there's a resistor in between.
Okay.
You got it. Oh, sorry, it was way, way back at the beginning. Did I tell you what Dr. Heisler told me?
What?
You know, he told me, and it actually made a tremendous difference for me. And I don't know if it'll help you or not, but for me it really helped. See, my background was this. I came from, you know, when I was in academy, I was kind of like Travis here. And I didn't like math at all until I finally got a teacher one time who said, look, I don't care if you do the homework. Doing math was like work. It was like yuck, you know. And he said, I don't care if you do the homework. If you can do well on the exams, you know, I will. If you get 90 or above, I won't make you do the homework. And so that was like the first time I ever liked math, because all of a sudden now there was some incentive to try and figure out to do well on the exam and study the stuff. And I actually found it was kind of interesting, you know. But I hated doing this. Oh, in third grade, I used to write down random numbers on the multiplication and the divisions and stuff. I hated that stuff. So anyway. Fortunately, that made me like math, but unfortunately, it gave me the idea I didn't have to do the homework. And so I kind of carried that all the way through academy and persuaded my teachers to either go along with me or you know, whatever. Anyway, they kind of lived with my laziness, right? And then when I got here, nobody would live with my laziness, you know, and I couldn't have like 2 hours on the exam to figure it out, right? I had to do it in the 1 hour, and you know how it is. You know, you sit there and you got to get cranked. You can't be hardly thinking. You just got to, you know, just crank it out, right? And so I could never get the exam done, right? And oh, that was horrible. So what did I do? I started trying to go faster, right? So what do you do when you go faster? Well, you write down stuff as fast as you can, and your writing gets messy, right? And when your writing gets messy, you're allowed to make, you know, little, you know, jot and tittle errors, right? And secondly, so I just kept working on trying to go faster and faster, you know. It was like, I just got to get faster. Somehow I got to get faster. But, you know, I'd always make some mistake, you know. And I'd find the mistake when I got down to the end of the problem and I got a ridiculous answer like you got there, right? Say, oh, shoot, now I got to go find this thing, right? You know, and it takes you just as long to find the thing as it did to do the problem in the first place, and you got to redo the whole thing again, right, after that. So you just lost a whole smear of time, right? And, of course, the same thing happens on homework, right? So Dr. Heisler said, look, here's what you need to do. And he had the most beautiful handwriting, you know. When he'd write on the board, it was just absolutely impeccable. I mean, beautiful. Because in the old days, engineers used to have, you know,
drawings.
Yeah, they used to write block writing. It was wonderful. You know, you should have seen Prof. Cross's handwriting. He was like Carlton's dad. He was absolutely incredible, right? And so he told me, write down every line. Don't skip steps. Write it down as neatly as you can. And then before you go to the next line, stop. And look at that line ever so carefully. Think about it, just think about it really hard and check every jot and tittle. Is everything beautiful on that line? Is everything perfect? And then, once you're absolutely sure there's no mistake on that line, think about how you could check just that line. Go to the next one, right? And you know what? That summer I went back and I worked at the Corps of Engineers again that summer, and they gave me some really boring stuff to do. I was writing, you know, just making lists of things, you know, and just for hours and hours, you know, writing things. And so I thought, well, I'm going to try and practice my handwriting, because every time in school, all the way from first grade on, always get N for needs improvement in handwriting. It was horrible. I was just horrible. So I started trying to write like Dr. Heisler, you know, and I wrote as neatly as I could, you know. And then when I went back to school, I did exactly what I said. I tried to write everything as neatly as possible, and don't skip any steps, because you're actually presenting it to the person you're doing the homework for. And, you know, it made at least 10% difference on my scores and exams. Plus, it cut the amount of time I was spending on homework and other stuff by, you know, another probably 30, 40%, right? Because I didn't have to go back and find those mistakes. And all of a sudden, I was getting the exam done in the class time, and I'd be done, and there'd still be 20 minutes of the exam left for me to go back and double check everything again. Whereas before, when I went through those things, I was never done at the end, right? Because I always found some mistake that I was looking back to try and fix, right? It was just horrible. So yeah. For me, it made a tremendous difference, you know? And I don't know if it'll help you, but you know, I see you already write neatly, you know?
Yeah.
And so on. But you gotta double check everything all the way along, and
yeah,
maybe it'll help you.
I don't know. It was late, and I don't know what
yeah,
I was thinking.
Right.
I guess I was thinking, oh, you know.
Yeah, right. That's another thing I discovered.
Oh,
I had to do anything I did after 10 p.m.
I
had to do it the next day anyway, so I just gave up and went to bed, you know.
Yeah, I started to do that, but I can't really do that anymore because I just don't have time. I have.
Well, you know, you might get more time if you could cut back the mistakes.
I tried. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You might. I mean, it might help. I mean, it helped me quite a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know. And this whole thing, it's a tough question. It's like life. How do you do it? And some people are well endowed with brains that just don't make mistakes, you know? There are some people like that, they just don't make mistakes. I mean, it's incredible. I don't know how they do it. But me, I make mistakes left and right.
Yeah.
And I'm always having to keep myself from tripping up. So I don't know.
So the state model that Rask defined is this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, the state model, all you had to do was have this A matrix, which I just erased here.
Oh. Okay.
It was just theta,
yeah,
theta dot
again.
Equals A times theta dot.
Okay.
It was just this is the state
that
model right there. That's
okay.
Good enough.
Okay.
But, you know, everything on there is good. Not like, right.
I know what it is. I'm
yeah, that's what you're after. The state model is just the A, B, C, D matrices. That's what you need.
Okay.
And that tells you what the A, B, C, D matrices are. You know, you see A there, B is 0, and since I'm interested in theta and theta dot, probably C is the identity and D is 0.
Isn't it?
Yeah, some of the little blessings in life. Okay, I certainly got a lot of assignments today. Well, have a good Sabbath, Aaron. Thanks for working on your stuff so hard.
All right. I still haven't gotten to the one that was initiated today. But
yeah, well, you still have time. Good Sabbath.
Yeah, you too.
I will. Thank you.
markets and around the world that are actually below $100, but they're nowhere close to the performance that you'd expect. They're the type of things that you'd maybe buy and throw away in 15 or 20 days. Multi-touch screen. It supports a 1080p video decoder with HDMI out. I can plug it into the TV, watch movies. Battery life on this thing with movie playback was about 8 hours. Also has a front and back camera, HDMI slot, SD card slot. It's running at 1 gigahertz. It has 4 gigabytes, 4 gigabytes and 8 gigabyte option for flash, 512 megs of RAM. And you know, fits in your pocket. This one that eliminates the cameras and the HDMI is $79. Exactly the same performance device, but $79. This one, which hasn't hit the market yet, looks very similar to this one with the two cameras, but while this one is a slightly lower resolution screen, which typically works very well in Asia, this is a wide VGA screen, 800 by 480, this is a slightly higher density, 1024 by 600, and a very beautiful screen. This one, probably another $10 or $15 more, so somewhere around the $115 price point. So one thing we're doing differently from ARM is we work very closely with our downstream partners, licensees, OEMs, etc., and try to understand exactly what their market requirements are. For example, on the Ingenic tablets that were released, we partnered very closely with Gameloft upstream ahead of time to understand that gaming is one big area for tablets, especially at this price point where content means a lot more than just a tablet that can browse the web or check email, things like that. And when our downstream partners understand the value of that, then they work with Gameloft, and so Gameloft content like Spider-Man HD, for example, is available on the tablet. Since we have a dominance in the set-top box and DTV market, which is also something different from where ARM is today, we've gained quite a bit of Android-level expertise. So we go through the extent of not only porting Android, but we optimize Android for our downstream partners to really shrink their time to market. Because our customers are based in China, and they also work towards stronger integration of other pieces of IP, whether it's, for example, these tablets have built-in HDMI, which is a part of his SoC, it delivers lower BOM costs as well. So this is the other reason why we're able to really bring down the prices of these specific devices. Everybody in this entire chain, from us as the IP provider, our silicon guys, Ingenic, or Action Semiconductor, and I'll show you some of their devices later, to the industrial design houses, to the ODMs, to the OEMs, to the branding and the carrier, all are making money throughout this whole chain. It's actually a very good business because, like you said, margins are shrinking in the hardware business, but the volumes are also increasing once the price hits this level. What we announced this morning was another OEM from Indonesia, SpeedUp, or MLW Telecom. They're the second largest CPE provider in Indonesia. They launched basically the same tablet branded to their own with Indonesian content with prepaid 6 months of Wi-Fi, roaming Wi-Fi service throughout Indonesia for $33. You just have to sign a contract for a year. But it is reality. It is not something that we're talking about that demonstrates a tablet that isn't really useful for the masses. I mean, this is something that you can use to browse the web. In fact, I keep one in my pocket because it's my primary email device now, too.